We're going to study tonight a responsum of the Imre Yosher, a Meir Arik, a great Polish Gaon from about a century ago, one of the leading poskim around World War I era. And the tshuva we're going to be doing actually deals with a situation that arose during a war, probably World War I. That was the other wars, but that was, you know, likely that was the war in question. Meir Arik was, a great Polish posik. His tshuvas are called Imre Yosher. His work on Shulchan Aruch is called Menchas Pitim, and he was widely regarded by his peers as one of the leading halachic authorities of his generation. The question involves Gerus. They wanted to convert someone, and the question specifically involves Gerus of a soldier. There was a soldier on active duty who was serving in presumably one of the European armies in wartime, and he wanted to convert, and I guess he had to work out with his superiors whether you let him get away with that or not. But this tshuva deals with two issues that arose in connection with his conversion. One of them was specific to the military context, and one was a more general question that applies to any case of adult conversion, and really any case of Ris Mila at all, as we'll see. The first part of the question is as follows. He says there was a question arose. One of the Anshei Chayil Hatzava, one of the men of the army, a soldier, he's converting. The question is, should they allow him to convert? Should they accept his conversion at all? Why not? He says he is onosu l'chal Shabbos. He will have no choice. He's still on active duty in wartime. He will have to be m'chal Shabbos. And also many other isurim, many other prohibitions, probably kashrus, among other things. B'yosef b'tzava, while he's in the army, he has no choice. He will have to violate various prohibitions. Because of Bikoch Nefesh. It's life and death situations out there. That's fine. So a person who's a Jew and finds himself in the army, no problem. You violate Shabbos, you eat non-kosher food, you do whatever you have to do to preserve life, your life, other people's lives. That's fine. But this fellow yet is not a Jew yet. He's still a non-Jew. He has no mitzvah of Shabbos. He has no mitzvah of kosher. So maybe he says, why should we convert him and then he'll be in a position where he has to violate all these averis? Why not just wait and not be Megayer him, and he'll stay a non-Jew, and he won't find himself in situations where he has to violate the halacha. That was the question that was posed to Rameir Arik. Should we convert him? Not convert him? Wait till the war is over, convert him then? What
he wanted to convert, but the people who were asked to convert him had those shaylos.
Sounds like that, yeah. Sounds like he was ready and willing to convert, and people wanted to know, is that the right thing to do? So he makes an interesting analogy. There's a question in the early poskim about Bris Mila. Bris Mila, we know we do on Shabbos. If it's the eighth day, we do a Bris Mila on Shabbos. If it's not the eighth day, it's been late for other. We never do a Bris Mila before the eighth day. But if it's post eighth day, the baby wasn't well, and we can't do the Bris Mila on the eighth day, then it's called a Mila Shelo Bizmana. Still a mitzvah, but it's not as critical to do it right away as it is when it's going to be the eighth day. Halacha is a mila shelo bezmana is not docha Shabbos. If the baby's sick and suddenly becomes ready for a bris mila and the next available day is Shabbos, you don't do the bris mila then, you wait till Sunday. Now, in the time of the Talmud, we don't do this today necessarily, but we don't do this today at all, but in the time of the Talmud, it was considered crucial that on the third day after the bris, they would have to have hot water to bathe the child. It was considered a critical life.
Sakana.
Yes, sakana to bathe. Then you needed hot water for that. Hot water typically meant heating up water, lighting fires on Shabbos. So the question was, if you have a mila shelo bezmana, you already missed the eighth day, and the first available day is a Thursday, and you know that if you do the mila today, 3 days from now on Shabbos, you're going to have to heat up the water as a matter of sakana. Should you do the mila today, or should you wait till tomorrow, Friday, where the third day will be Sunday? So again, if you do the mila, then you realize, oh no, it's going to be Shabbos, we're not going to have hot water, you heat up the water, because saving the baby's life is certainly override Shabbos. But the question is here, we have a choice. We cannot do the mila today. We can push off the mila till tomorrow. And we can thus avoid finding ourselves in a situation where we have to do chil Shabbos to save life. Should we do that or not? He says the halacha is, no such consideration. Right now it's Thursday, right now we have a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to do the bris mila. Do the mila. Now you're worried that you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos. So fine, you'll be Mechal Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh, no problem. You're not Mechuyev to take actions today during the week on a Thursday. You don't have to schedule your life and push off mitzvahs in order to avoid finding yourself later on Shabbos in a situation of Pikuach Nefesh.
Okay, so this is a situation where the Zaman is Thursday.
It's Shlobo Zman. You already missed the Zman of the day. It's like 2 weeks after the baby was born. You find yourself on the first day, he's healthy and available for Mila is a Thursday. So that, he says, the halacha is you don't push it off the Mila. And similar thing applies to a ger. If a ger comes to convert and wants it, and he's ready on Thursday, the first day is available, the next available day is a Thursday to do the Mila for the ger. Again, in the time of Chazal, where they have to do this water thing, there's a concern that you may have to heat up water on the third day. No problem, he says. The halacha is, according to most poskim, it's okay. According to the Ikar LaHalacha, it's okay, he says, because it'll become Shabbos. You'll have Pikuach Nefesh. You'll be Mechal Shabbos. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that. The Chil Shabbos is permitted when it's Pikuach Nefesh. I don't have to avoid doing a bris today. I don't have to change my schedule today to avoid finding myself in a situation of Chil Shabbos. So a similar thing applies here in the soldier. He's ready to become a ger today. He's ready to convert. We're ready to convert him. The fact that going forward he's going to find himself in situations where he has to Mechal Shabbos because of Pikuach Nefesh, not a problem. Today he's ready to be a ger. Whatever he has to do in the future because of Pikuach Nefesh, he can do. He brings an interesting precedent for this, an interesting raya. There is a brisa in Maseches Gerim, a section that deals with the laws of Gerim. It says a person wants to convert, we tell him, so we know that the Talmud already tells us, we try to warn him about the downside of being a Jew, we're not a popular nation, we're persecuted, etc. But this brisa in Maseches Gerim adds more language, lesser known language. It says, you see our nation, where we're subjugated to others, where we don't have a good place in the world. And also he says, Neharogin alamila valatvila valshar kalamitzvos, where we're killed, we practice our religion at risk to ourselves, we suffer tremendous religious persecution to the extent of death even. We have to be like the secret Jews, the Muranos in Spain. We're not even able to practice our religion in public. So obviously, Mayor Arik says, this was not written in the U.S. of A. We can pretty much do what we want, and we don't have to compromise in our Judaism. This was written at a time.
Can't eat Starbucks.
Can't eat Starbucks, Roy Zakim says. Okay. But in general, this brisa was clearly written at a time where being Jewish was terribly risky, was terribly dangerous. We have to compromise. We can't even afford to be Jewish in public. We get killed for doing mitzvahs. Nevertheless, we accept the ger. We warn him, this is what you're getting into, so he should enter it knowing exactly what the consequences are. But if he wants to do it, we do it. We don't say, you know, we shouldn't accept gerim because they're going to have to you know, ignore some mitzvahs because of Bikuach Nefesh. It clearly was a dangerous time. Nevertheless, we still accept the gerim. So the halacha is, you see, that just because a ger will have to violate various prohibitions because of Pikuach Nefesh is not a reason not to accept the ger. Accepting a ger is a good thing. We do it. Whatever he has to do going forward because of Pikuach Nefesh, he'll do. Not a reason not to accept the ger. So Rameir Arik is arguing that we can do the geris. The fact that he'll have to Mechal Shabbos in the army for Pikuach Nefesh doesn't bother us. Not a reason to push off the geris. Furthermore, he says, even though in Mila there are some poskim who say that it is better to push off the Mila, there he says he's talking about a couple of days. You don't do it on Thursday, you do it on Friday, you do it next week. He says, but here, you know, who knows when the war will end? He says, it goes on for years. So push off the gerus for so long that you're not going to do.
And the soldier will make us maybe die.
Right. He may not even make it to the end of the war, right. So there are a couple of interesting things about his analysis here. First of all, he's making the assumption here that as a soldier in the army, it's realistic and plausible that he'll certainly have to do some Chil Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, and that's fine, he says. And he seems to assume that he won't have to do anything else beyond that which is necessary for Chil Shabbos. Realistically, like in today's army, there's probably a lot of things your commanders are going to want you to do that are not strictly relevant to Chil Shabbos, that are not strictly necessary for Pikuach Nefesh. Practically speaking, could you really get away in the army with saying, I'm only going to do, again, Pikuach Nefesh can mean from the enemy or it can mean from your own commanding officer if he's going to kill you for not doing what he wants you to do. But he seems to think that it's realistic to say, to tell the soldier, we'll convert you, you'll do whatever you have to do for Pikuach Nefesh, and nothing else. We covered earlier in the year, we covered other poskim who make very similar assumptions, willing to concede that this is possible in the context of volunteering for the army. Poskim, also in the 19th century, discussed whether a Jew is allowed to volunteer for a European army, even during wartime, where there's a certainty or a high likelihood he'll have to be Mechal Shabbos and eat non-kosher food and other things. And they make the same argument. They say, well, what does he have to do? Anything that he has to do for Pikuach Nefesh is mutter. Anything that he doesn't have to do, he won't do. So they also think that it's realistic to tell a soldier to expect him to follow that code of conduct. You do what you have to do for Pikuach Nefesh and nothing else. And therefore, they actually argued, you're allowed to volunteer for the army, you're allowed to enlist, you're allowed to offer yourself as a surrogate to serve instead of somebody else. Other poskim felt not. The Chasam Sofer actually says that anyone who volunteers for the army and is not forced into it is a Russia, he's agreeing to be Michal Shabbos. Again, whether he disagrees with the fundamental argument or he just felt that, practically speaking, as I was saying, people who join the army are likely to do Chil Shabbos when not necessary. But that was that's the assumption of a number of poskim here, that being a soldier is compatible with being an observant Jew. Whatever you have to do for Pikuach Nefesh is absolutely fine, nothing to complain about, nothing wrong with that. Whatever you don't have to do, you won't do. The basic question of the Imrei Yosher, the basic idea of the Imrei Yosher, that you're allowed to make decisions before Shabbos that will put you in a position where you're going to wind up to have to be Mechal Shabbos on Shabbos or Pikuach Nefesh, is a crucial point that comes up in a variety of halakhic contexts. One very common application of this is the question of either a doctor or a patient, an expectant woman, do they have to arrange their schedule before Shabbos to avoid the necessity of having to mechal Shabbos on Shabbos? So, for example, women who are imminently due, and maybe they live near the hospital, but they want to go away for Shabbos, and they know that if they go into labor when they're away from the hospital, they're going to have to drive to the hospital on Shabbos. Maybe they can hire a taxi, maybe they have to drive themselves. Some poskim will actually tell women in such cases that they should not travel far from the hospital. They should not be away from the hospital on Shabbos, because you don't want to have to mechal Shabbos if you go into labor. My sister lives in Washington Heights, where Rav Schechter tells them that. Rav Herschel Schechter tells them, I think, that you shouldn't travel away from your hospital when you're close to your due date, because you shouldn't put yourself in a situation where you're going to have to mechal Shabbos. Similarly, some posts can talk about doctors who are on call or maybe called in. So whatever is not pikuach nefesh, they shouldn't do, but they may have to do work which is pikuach nefesh. So they can stay home and just have their pager on, and they may have to drive into the hospital on Shabbos if a pikuach nefesh case comes up, or they can just spend the night in the hospital. Some posts can say they should spend the night in the hospital to avoid the necessity of having to travel on Shabbos. Other posts can say no, like the Imrei Yosher says, you're not mechuyev to. On Friday afternoon, on Thursday, you're not mechuyev to arrange your schedule so that you won't have to be mechal Shabbos tomorrow. If you have to mechal Shabbos tomorrow, it's pikuach nefesh. You do what you have to do. But right now, today, you're under no obligation to anticipate the Chil Shabbos and act accordingly before Shabbos comes. One other interesting application of this I once saw, also in a military context, another 19th or early 20th century tshuva. There was a case of a Jew who was drafted to the army. He had to present himself to the draft office at a certain date, on a certain date, in a certain place. The date they chose, the government chose, again, some European country, was on a Shabbos. So he had to, on Yontif, it was on Shmini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, he had to present himself on Yontif to the draft office. And there was no saying no. This was not optional. So he had a choice. He can either travel to that city before Shabbos, before Yontif, on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, spend Yontif in the hotel somewhere, and then walk to the draft office on Yontif day. Or he could stay home, enjoy Yontif with his family, his community, and on that day of Yontif, he'd say, okay, now I have to go. I have no choice. I have to travel on Yontif. So the tshuva, the Sefer Minchas Yehuda, he actually says, if he goes before Yontif, he'll have a very miserable Yontif. There was no community there, his family wasn't there, he'd have to spend the entire Yontif away from home, and there would be a violation of Oneg, of Simchas Yontif. Because of that, he says, there's no reason to, you don't have to do that, he says. You can stay home on Yontif, stay in your town. The morning where the situation arises, at that point you'll travel. At that point, it's Pikuach Nefesh, you have no choice, you have to travel. You'll do it. But you're not obligated to make arrangements before Yontif to avoid having to mechal Yontif on Yontif. This is the attitude, at least when it's a question of mitzvah involved, like his case, or like the Geirus case, and the Imrei Yosher. Many poskim are arguing that you have no obligation before Shabbos or Yontif to forego a mitzvah, or to seriously inconvenience yourself, to avoid having to mechal Shabbos or mechal Yontif, if the Chil Yontif or Shabbos in question will be absolutely necessary because of Pikuach Nefesh or similar. It's a good question. I don't know. As I said, some poskim seem to rule not like that, like in the case of the pregnant women or the doctors. It's machlokas. Some poskim say, you know, do what you want, it doesn't matter. Some poskim say, you should try to avoid it. I don't have a clear sense in what, in, if there is a consensus or if there are subtle differences in the cases. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the bottom line halakha, but there definitely is such a position in the poskim, serious position, whether what a contemporary poskim will tell you. I think a lot will depend on how much you're giving up by making these arrangements before Shabbos. If you're just telling a woman, you know, don't go visiting, stay home, like, okay, so not such a big deal. You have your family home, you stay home anyway. It's a question of, you know, it's a question of, you know, telling a doctor he should go away from his family and sleep in the hospital on Shabbos. You're asking him to give up his family life, helping, you know, being with his wife and children. There, I think Poskim might be more quicker to find leniency. So I think a lot would probably depend on, like here, if you ask him to give up his gerus, like he might not even survive the war. He might give up his chance to be a Jew. I think where the benefit is very high, I think Poskim will be quicker to rely on the svara that you don't have to take precautions before Shabbos.
Is there a related issue?
So we're going to start with Beit Lamed Beitus.
So says when you invite guests to spend time with you on Shabbos, and you know they're going to have to travel because they're not sure of Shabbos.
So that's really it's a similar sounding issue. But I think the halachic arguments are different there. There, you know, the Chilul Shabbos is not beheter. All these cases what we were dealing with is the Chilul Shabbos will be beheter because pikuach nefesh. Right, in that case, where the Chilul Shabbos is not really beheter, just they don't observe Shabbos, they don't know, they don't observe Shabbos for whatever reason, there I think it's a more serious. On the one hand, you're not doing the Chilul Shabbos, they are, and then they have the choice to do it. On the other hand, you're causing what Halacha views as a bona fide Shabbos violation. So that I think is a more problematic case, a stricter. Again, there are leniencies there too, but that I think is we're somewhat stricter about.
Okay, so what about the other issue that you touched on, but I don't know if you're going back to it, which is the one where the
only
there is some question whether you can rely on somebody's intestinal fortitude. And clarity of mind to succumb to all kind of pressures that are involved in being in the army, for example, and where you cannot see him well. You have to make a decision as to whether it is a matter of life and death.
And
somebody else might say, well, this is not a matter of life. You're just doing it not to be punished or to be able to get ahead. So the question of clarity, when you're putting yourself in a situation where you, Hashem took us out of Egypt, in part because we could not be for the Jews. And it was not only pikuach nefesh,
right.
It was also a question of being able to.
Culture and environment.
So that's a more difficult question. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I agree. I agree that in practical, real world situations, that is a real issue, like in the army case. I did raise that. I don't have too much more to say about it. On the one hand, halacha does recognize that there's such a thing as overwhelming pressure. There are many, many halachas are based on the fact that human beings are fallible and expect to, and will sin if they're exposed to enough temptation, enough pressure. The whole idea of yichud, there are many gzeiros of chazal that are set up to prevent a person from having a difficult or overwhelming temptation. I don't have much more to say about it now because he does not address that in the tshuva. I agree, it's a very valid question. A rav who was asked a question like this in the real world would certainly have to take that into account. But I'm not going to go too much further down that road because he himself doesn't discuss it. So I didn't prepare that angle of the discussion.
In fact, one of the questions, one of the things that the army often says to Haredim in Israel is that they do a lot of different things to accommodate them because the concern about being subject to all kind of temptations and food and so on is one that they take seriously, so they try to minimize that kind of concern. So it's not a matter of life and death, it's a matter of being able to deal with being around women is not a life and death issue, but for some people it might be an incredible temptation that will lead to
So I don't have a real answer to that. I just want to mention one note. I have a friend who is in the Navy, and graduated from the Naval Academy. I found an article about him where the article mentioned that, and he takes his religion very seriously. It says that the article said that at his graduation ceremony, he cut a cake with his dress sword, which he was first tovel in the mikvah for the occasion.
To do malacha as soon as the Baal HaBayis
is out. So, yeah, if the will is there, you can find, in a Medina Shel Chesed like the United States, you can find ways around if you care enough. Yeah, so it's an important point. I mean, besides, this is kind of a trivial example, but I'm not going to go too much further down that road. But, so I wanted to spend a few minutes on the second half of the tshuva, which is an even much more practical question, which comes up all the time. Not specifically relevant to the fact that he was a soldier. It can come up in any Geirus, and as I said, indeed in any Bris Mila case. The soldier was about 30 years old. The Mila obviously would have been a painful operation on an adult. The question was, can they use anesthesia? They wanted to be... It was some kind of topical ointment or topical cream. They were not discussing what we call general anesthesia or sedation. They were discussing a local or regional anesthetic that would be topically applied to numb or desensitize the area in question, to make the Mila more bearable. It's a very common child today, certainly. Today, any kind of surgery is routinely done with anesthesia or at least some kind of pain medication. And the question is, can you do a Mila with this type of technology? Again, he was writing about 100 years ago where these techniques were first being developed and first kind of being studied and understood and made safe and effective. The question was, can you do Mila with anesthesia? Now, from this time, about 100, 150 years ago, from this time, there are numerous tshuvos that discuss this question. He was one of the first. He was one of the first poskim in writing to discuss this question of doing Mila with anesthesia. Why not? You know, what's the argument against? So Ramer Arik, takes a very hardline position. He was opposed to it. He argued strongly it should not be done. It's not traditional and should not be done. In terms of why shouldn't it be done, what's the objection? You know, what's wrong? What's the downside? He makes a very provocative argument. He says, first he tries to argue that he tries to bring proof that the sages of the Talmud knew certain anesthetic techniques and did not use them, so that would be a kind of proof that he shouldn't do it. Doesn't explain why, but he tries to prove that they had certain methods of anesthesia available to them which they did not use. In terms of why, in terms of the fundamental question of what on earth is wrong with using anesthesia for Mila, so he brings a midrash which indicates that Abraham Avinu had suffered as an adult from the pain of the Mila, and he did it anyway, and he got great tzar for doing it, and he was a great tzar. He jumps from that to the conclusion that Mila, that the pain in Mila is not just an unfortunate byproduct. Pain is the desirable, ideal way Mila should be performed. You shouldn't go. What?
It's part of the experience.
Part of the experience, yes. Hashem wants there to be some elements of pain. That's the appropriate way to do Mila. He says that, and he winds up by saying, Chas v'shalom l'chadish hadashos, we shouldn't innovate in a mitzvah like Mila, so nagu me'olam, it was never done, and it's not traditional, and you shouldn't.
Is Mila one of the 10 trials of Avraham?
Yes, I believe according to most of the standard counts it is, yes.
So are we to put ourselves on the madriga and say ourselves that we are able to do what Avraham Avinu did?
So you are raising an excellent point that Avraham Avinu, yes, there is a midrash that says that Avraham Avinu deliberately had tzar, Hashem wanted him to have tzar. Like you said, Avraham Avinu was a unique individual. He was a special individual. He was the not everyone is Avraham Avinu. Just even if we can see that there is some desirable element of Mila to have tzar, that doesn't mean everyone has to do that. And so from the Reyosha's time, poskim were split on the question. So first of all, we should note poskim discuss several variations of the question. First of all, there's the question of Mila, routine Mila, a normal Mila, a normal healthy child. Should we do anesthesia or not? And then the question about adults, like this case where the Mila was being done on an adult. And with regard to kid or adult, the post can differentiate between normal healthy individuals and those who are either unhealthy to begin with or whose Mila is particularly complicated and non-trivial and not routine. So the post-kim are more willing to allow anesthesia for milas that are unusually difficult, or the child is in unusually delicate health, or likely to suffer more, or to be hurt, have his health damaged more by the mila. Poskim are more reluctant to allow anesthesia for a normal healthy child, no particular complications, and no particular health problems. Poskim are more reluctant to allow anesthesia, although again, it's very unclear what should be wrong with it. The Mariosher has this very speculative argument. The Mariosher's argument has two prongs. One of them is he argues that it's not traditional. Other argument is that there are agadic sources that Mila is supposed to have pain. Many other poskim push back strongly against these arguments. Ramosha Feinstein, for example. Ramosha Feinstein has a tshuva referring to some comments of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach wasn't primarily discussing Mila. Rav Shlomo Zalman was trying to establish a general principle that we don't innovate, kind of religious conservatism. We don't like to innovate on the way a mitzvah has been done. If it's a traditional method of performing a mitzvah, we should be reluctant to innovate and change the way it's been done for a long time. One of the examples that Shlomo Zalman Orbach gave is Mila. He says he's talking about ordinary Mila of an ordinary infant. He says we don't use anesthesia, even though logically that there's no obvious reason why, that there's no clear reason why we shouldn't do it. He says it falls under this general blanket rule that we don't innovate in the performance of mitzvahs. Ramosha Feinstein strongly disagrees. That's what Orbach held. Ramosha Feinstein strongly disagreed. He says there is no general rule that we just can't make changes in mitzvahs. He says it's true we don't use anesthesia. That is true. It's not the custom, and it's still not the custom. He says it's true we don't do anesthesia, but that is not because of a general principle that we don't innovate in mitzvahs. Rather, he says it's because anesthesia is fundamentally unhealthy. It's much healthier, he says, to do procedures without anesthesia. Adults, they can't tolerate the pain. There's no choice. We give in to their request. We allow them anesthesia. But it's not ideal, he says, neither for adults nor for children. And particularly, he says, if you're dealing with a child, he says it's a child, you shouldn't do anesthesia because it's in his own best interest not to use anesthesia. He'll heal better and he'll be healthier without anesthesia. Now he says he concedes if the child will be so distraught and he'll wail and he'll disturb the doctor and he'll hinder the doctor's ability to do his work, then maybe do it, he says. But otherwise, he says, you really shouldn't be using anesthesia at all because it's not healthy and it hampers recovery. So, I don't know what Ramosha means. I don't understand this. First of all, does Ramosha really mean you shouldn't use anesthesia for any procedure on a child? If a child needs serious surgery, lo aleinu, does that mean Ramosha really recommended that you shouldn't use any anesthesia? That seems hard to swallow. I assume he meant that Mila, which is a relatively trivial procedure, the kid gets over it relatively quickly usually, combined with the fact that he thinks anesthesia is not healthy, you shouldn't do it. But in halacha, there's no reason not to, he says. But again, the question is, where did Ramosha get this idea from that anesthesia is so fundamentally unhealthy and should be avoided? It's true that general anesthesia, heavy sedation, certainly carries risks. That's true. But again, the post can discuss different types of anesthesia. Some of them are discussing, you know, full general anesthesia, full sedation. A lot of them, like the Mariosher himself, were simply discussing, you know, local topical agents that would simply numb some of the nerves and wouldn't have any deep effects on the body's rhythm or metabolism. It doesn't seem there's any real danger in using those kind of creams. I mean, you could obviously have an allergic reaction, but that's a manageable risk. We can try a little bit first if they know what they're doing. My understanding is certainly with today's technology, there is limited or no risk from a superficially applied cream, or the deeper you get, once you start with shots, once you start getting deeper into nerves, there's always some risk of complications. But we do it all the time. We do it for adults. We do it for plastic surgery. Many postmen actually were opposed to plastic surgery on the grounds that the risk was too high and that the need wasn't great enough. And the anesthesia risk, in particular, the risk of anesthesia was significant. But again, that's more of a concern with full sedation or general anesthesia. There doesn't seem to be all that much risk in a simple topical anesthetic to temporarily block some of the nerves from feeling the pain.
There's no discussion that the woman, the wife, is
this will probably take us a little field, but
for herself.
Raises the
it's
question,
not that the husband answered her. She herself became an answer. It's not even that the husband is being answered and therefore the wife is being answered. The husband being part of the seaboard that was in Shabbos, that's going to include his bias, that just as you
leading
have the ability
to
include
something
who are part
more
of
significant, which
there,
is
so
being
in that
entering
kind of
into the covenant.
Shabbos, that would fall along as
well.
What?
And
oh, so hold on a second.
Practice
how
as a Jew however
you
can, under whatever the circumstances, versus saying that the procedure itself, the...
oh, you're meaning assuming that...
assuming right now the shul has ability to pull people.
Performance of a particular mitzvah has to be has to follow a certain regimen in order to.
So says Rav Moshe. Aval yesh ladum v'im yesh ba'ir bati knesi. It was hard.
Certain process. So
that if there's a
the accommodation issue, which I think is what different rabbis seem to be allowing, seems to be going
to
put aside
and
the insistence on the performance of the mitzvah itself, rather than what it's leading up to.
Yeah, the focus there is more on the technical performance of the mitzvah rather than the state of entering the covenant. That's true. Poskim here are focused on the fairly technical question of the mitzvah itself, yes. But even here, we find the poskim go both ways. So, in contemporary times, one of the great medical halachic ethicists, Rabbi Abraham Sofer Abraham, he writes that he spoke to both Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rabbi Yosef Shlomo Yashuv, from Lebracha. He asked him about anesthesia, and he said they both told him that if there's no medical reason, if there's no medical reason against it, and I've spoken to doctors who have told me it's routine in hospital settings to use when they do a hospital circumcision to use some kind of basic painkiller. Or at the site, then it should be done. It should be done. They did a Avram did it based on what was available in his time. We can do it our way if it's and they actually say you should do it too. Why cause the baby unnecessary pain? Rabbi Abraham notes that subsequently they told him that Rabbi Yashuv was actually against anesthesia. He says he went back to Rabbi Yashuv. Rabbi Yashuv is famous for being misquoted or changing his mind. He asked Rabbi Yashuv, and Rabbi Yashuv said he shouldn't do it. For a healthy baby, ordinary healthy child, he shouldn't do it, unless there are extenuating circumstances, you should generally avoid it. And when he asked Rabbi Yashuv's followers what's going on, so they said, they told him that when Rabbi Yashuv first gave his ruling, he had not been aware of our tshuva, of Rameir Arik. Subsequently, he saw it, and he deferred to that tshuva. And again, there are posts who go both ways. The general consensus is, I think, is pretty much in favor if there are extenuating circumstances, if the child is a little bit older, or if the meal is particularly complicated, or if the child's health is tenuous to begin with. Poskim are pretty okay with doing it in those circumstances. They're generally opposed to doing it when it's an ordinary healthy child. Then they feel it's not necessary and it shouldn't be done. For adults, I think it generally is done.
I understood that the process of doing Rispila with an adult was a pinprick.
My understanding is there is such a thing as a pinprick. That's called hatafas dam bris, just taking out a drop of blood. That's usually done for someone who had a circumcision, maybe not a proper bris milah, like many Americans are circumcised, even non-Jews. I think it's less common in Europe, but in America, many ordinary non-Jewish males are circumcised. The halacha is, if a circumcised male non-Jew decides to become a Jew, you can't recircumcise him. The foreskin is already missing. Then you do the pinprick thing. But if a person is actually an RL, never had a bris mila at all, I'm pretty sure you do a full bris in that case. So poskim are much quicker to allow anesthesia in that case. There is an additional concern some poskim talk about with general anesthesia, an interesting argument. Some poskim say that there's a lot of discussion. Typically, mila is not done by the person himself. It's usually done by a mohel or a doctor or a third party. Some poskim understand that there's a kind of shlichus, an agency relationship between the mohel and you. Very often, the father makes the mohel a shliach. They often do a ritual appointment, make me a shliach. Many poskim understand that when it's an infant, the infant is not capable of expressing an opinion. But when it's an adult, many poskim feel that the adult himself is doing a mitzvah. The subject of the mila is getting a mitzvah, and he's appointing the mohel as an agent. Some posts can feel that agency relationship, that mitzvah experience, is diminished if he's not conscious. So we shouldn't knock him out because it doesn't say it's ma'akeh, but it's less than ideal to knock it out. Some folks can say it does not matter. Some folks can say if you go through the technical laws of agents, if you appoint an agent and go to sleep, the agent is capable of continuing to act on your behalf. Comes up in the laws of Gittin, for example. If the husband appoints a shaliach to deliver a get, and then the husband goes to sleep, the shaliach can act while the principal is asleep. And some posts can say, anesthesia, we view like sleep, as long as he made the appointment before he went to sleep, and then he went to sleep, whether it's natural sleep or drugs, doesn't really matter. Some posts can say, the agency is fine, he's mekayim the mitzvah that way. Other posts can say, you shouldn't do it. So if you're dealing with general anesthesia, you have this additional concern. You also have the concern that there is a health risk, and maybe getting into the question of balancing how much risk there actually is. That's what Dr. Heller told me when I was preparing for our talk last time. He said, people don't realize that every general anesthesia has significant risk. It's not huge, but it's, you know, it's measurable. It's not a negligible risk. It's real risk, so it should be avoided for no reason. Certainly, if it comes to general anesthesia, you can make a case against it, both in terms of the idea of being conscious and aware of the mitzvah, as well as in terms of the risk. If you're dealing with topical, externally applied agents that simply dull or eliminate the pain, there seems to be very little argument against, except for the twin arguments, A, from tradition, it's not the way Mila has traditionally been done, and B, the fact that the Imre Yosher said you're supposed to feel pain. But many poskim are not impressed by these arguments. Or Moshe Feinstein says that it's not an argument. We don't find any such argument in halacha. We don't just make up arbitrary reasons. And he's worried about health. But if you can get past the health concern, wouldn't be much of an issue. And similarly, Rabbi Abraham said he spoke to Rabbi Yashim and Shlomo Zalman, both of whom didn't feel, at least initially, that there was any real objection. Any real objection if it was not medically contraindicated. There is a interesting tshuva on the subject in the Sefer Marchei Lev, Reb Tirelson. He was asked about a case. It was a 5-year-old boy. For whatever reason, he hadn't had a bris milah earlier. He apparently wasn't in great health. The mother was terrified of putting her son through this, and he wanted to know if there was any basis for... If there was any basis for using anesthesia. So he goes through this whole question of, is there any halakhic basis for the notion that pain is an essential, integral part of the milah? He argues at some length that there is really no source for it, that there's really no makar, he says. No posek mentioned until the Imre Yosher, a relatively late authority, no posek articulates such a concern. He says, Shur HaSadin, he says, is mutter. Once there is really no real halakhic basis for opposing it, you can't have a minhag, he says. And Ryosha said the minhag is not to do it. He says there's no minhag. A minhag that doesn't hang on to a legitimate halakhic concern. If there are halakhic arguments both ways, the minhag can be that we follow a certain opinion or that we recognize a certain concern. If there is literally zero traditional halakhic argument against, he says the minhag itself has no... can't have a minhag, he says, to cause tzar when there is ain lo kol yisod b'torah, when there is no foundation in the Torah for this. He says you can't have a minhag. So he much of the tshuva he argues for do whatever you want. The end of the tshuva he makes a kind of about face. He says, well, he does adopt the religious conservatism attitude that the Imre Yosher mentions, that Rosh Hashanah Zalman Orbach mentioned, or Moshe didn't like, but he does. He does defer to that kind of conservatism argument that we shouldn't be mamti tachpula, we shouldn't invent new techniques and new tricks. He says if there's no real makar for it, he said, even though there's no real makar, we shouldn't go out of our way to just willy-nilly change the traditional methods in Mila. However, he says, in his case, which was an exceptional case, it was a yotim and aklal case, chalila, he says, lahachmer against the opposition of the mother. And then he shows a very a great deal of sensitivity to the poor mother. He says we should chalila to be stringent against the request of the mother, hadoeges l'chai olala, who is worried about the life of her young child, ishon eina, the apple of her eye. He's very sympathetic. We understand the mother. The mother's not being she's not a troublemaker. He says she's genuinely terrified about the health and the well-being of her son. He says. And it was an unusual case. He was 5 years old, and he may not have been in great health to begin with, he says. So certainly in such a case, there is no need to be stringent. We don't need a... It's true, in general, we should, all else being equal, we shouldn't deviate from the traditional methods. But if there is a strong reason to, he says, then don't worry about it. Similarly, the Shevet Alevi, Rav Osner. Also, Ikra Din, under normal circumstances, he says we should follow the traditional method, follow the Imre Yosher, and don't do it. But if there are cases, if it's an unusually complicated bris, or if the health, the child's health is anyway not great, certainly says we can follow the opinions that anesthesia is fine. We can use anesthesia for the bris.